So, hi everyone. I am Venerable Pasunda. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm here filling in for Bhante Sujato this week. So I am your monk in cyberspace. Bhante's off celebrating his dad's birthday. So happy birthday to Bhante's dad, and also happy birthday to Sin Sin.
Yes, indeed.
Well, apparently, there we go. And everyone's asked me, I've had a few people ask me if Bhante's going to be back on Sunday. Bhante will be back on Sunday as far as I know. But you've got me for this week, so we can do whatever we want. What should we do? Bhante's not here. So, substitute teacher. How does it sound if we do some chanting, some meditation, maybe some Dharma talk, Q&A, just something different, right? Okay, no. All right. So, first off, we'll start off with we're here on the land of the Burramattu people of Darug Nation and pay respects to their elders past, present, and all the guardian spirits of this land. With a gratitude, we are all here and welcome any of the guardian spirits who are around to join us for tonight. So we will start off with some chanting. There are chanting sheets. You guys all good? I haven't got a link for anyone online, but hopefully if anyone needs chanting sheets, someone can drop a link in. If people can turn their cameras on, if that feels appropriate and suitable for them, that would be helpful. It might just be my connection because I can't see anybody. Oh, thank you, Tim, for dropping the link in. That's really useful. Okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammam saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dvitiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dvitiyampi
saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dvitiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ
Opanaiko pachatam weditabo vinyuhiti supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Samichipatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Yadidam chatta Chattari Purisa Yugani.
Adidam Chattari Purisa Yugani. Atha Purisa Pugala. Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo. Anuttaraṃ puṇyakṛtaṃ lokasaddhi. Okay, very good. It appears I was muted for half of that. When I said, have we got sound? I got a heart in the chat and there we go. Well, anyway, sorry, everyone. So for those of you who missed out before, I'm Venerable Pasunda. I am your monk in cyberspace. Bhante's away for this week visiting his dad, and so I'm filling in, and we've decided we're going to do some meditation, maybe a Dharma talk. So, yeah. So just settling into the body and settling into the room, and just letting go of the week that we've had. And I've had a special request for this week. I was going to ask people what kind of meditation to do, but the vote has already been taken back at Rhonda Place. So you're all outvoted by pay. And welcome, come in, have a seat. Make yourself comfortable. You missed all the boring bits. Is that how it goes? Yes, so the vote was that we do some elements meditation. So that's what we'll be doing today. So I'll just say a few words about meditation while everyone gets settled. And elements meditation has actually become one of my favorite practices. And I think by doing it, it's actually helped with like developing myself in breath meditation. So, and the reason for that is it's about cultivating perception, right? And I guess like the whole of this Eightfold Path is about cultivating perception, and I guess I'll talk about that a little bit later. But in terms of practicing elements meditation, it's about picking out a specific quality within our meditation. So once we learn to do that thing with our mind, then we can apply that to other kinds of meditation. So we could apply that also to the breath, right? Because people can find that the breath is quite boring. But if you actually know how to train your perception on your different meditation objects, then you can actually learn to tune into the different qualities of it. So hopefully we can do that with doing some of the elements. I'm not sure how many of the elements we're going to actually get through in this session, but we will see. Come on in, sit down, make yourself comfortable. Good to see you. All right. So, let's have some water. Settling yourself into the space that you're in. Just bringing yourself, bring your attention into your body, making any adjustments you need to your posture. And making it clear in the mind that now is the time for meditation. So just letting go. Of the past. Letting go. Of any future plans or worries. And bringing up a sense of contentment and gratitude, just happy to be here with our Dharma friends. And so we'll start by noticing the earth element, which has a quality of solidity and hardness. And start with our heads, very easy to notice. The earth element is noting earth. Just bringing up that perception of hardness in the body. Feeling the hardness of the skull. The solidity of the skin. Earth element. Feeling as the mind moves down the face and the neck, earth, earth, earth. Seeing if you can connect with that perception of hardness or heaviness. Moving the attention down the torso, feeling the hardness of the collarbone, spine, rib cage, allowing the mind to settle into this perception and abandon the broader perception of the world. Feeling its grounded nature of the earth. Noticing any hard qualities, heavy qualities, settling into them, making that perception more in your mind. Earth, earth, earth. Feeling the weight, body, the hardness of the body through the hips, those big bones, just earth element, earth, earth.
moving further down the body through the legs, the solidity of the thighs, the knees, the calves, and the feet. Earth. 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 Feeling that hardness through the body, solidity, heaviness, making that perception greater. Settling into where it is most prominent for you. Earth. Earth. Noticing where the internal earth element touches the external earth element. Earth. 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 Picking that up, bringing it in, making much of it. Feeling the weight of this body as it touches the external earth element. Knowing the hardness and solidity of the external earth element in the seat, in the ground, earth, earth. Feeling the internal earth element and the external earth element and seeing if you can make that perception the same internally and externally. This body is just earth element. Allowing your mind to become established in that perception. Now see if you can switch your perception to the water element, perceiving it somewhere in your face, maybe in the moisture in your eyes, or in your mouth or in your nose. Water. 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 Perception of moisture, fluidity, flexibility. Moving your mind through the body. Feeling the moisture in the skin, face and the back. Armpits or hands. Just water element. Maybe you can feel subtle movements of the water element flowing through your body in the form of blood or digestive fluids sweat. Just water element. Moving further down the body, through the pelvis and the hips, water. Through the thighs, the legs, and the feet. Water. Seeing if you can perceive the water element throughout the body, and the body is made up of just water element. Making that perception great. Water. See if you can just feel any of the water element in the atmosphere around you. Maybe it's just where there's a bit of moisture in the air, or where the moisture on your skin meets the external water element. Knowing the water element externally, knowing the water element internally, just water element. Seeing if we can make that perception the same internally and externally, just water element. Settling into just knowing water. Knowing the water element wherever it's most prominent for you. Sinking into it. Water, water. And now just bringing the other elements back in. So just bring the earth element back in, perceiving that in our bodies. Feeling the hardness of our bones, our skin. Feeling the heat. Feeling the air. And just bringing our minds back to a normal perception of our bodies. Just looking back over the meditation and seeing how did I use my mind? How was I able to attain different perceptions? What were the difficulties? And how do I feel now at the end of the meditation? And finally, we can share the merit of this meditation. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize the highest peace, Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. All right, no one's turned into any puddles? Great. The perception of more people have arisen here at Granville. Okay, so we're going to take a short break, have some tea.
and we'll be back shortly for the Dharma talk. Time for some Dharma talk. So I thought I'd go through the five subjects for frequent recollection. Who knows the five subjects for frequent recollection? Some people do. Some people. Some of them? Okay, well, that's good. Most of the time people are like, what are these? What are these five subjects for frequent recollection? And yes, it's like one of the... very good. Very good. So it's one of those topics that the Buddha says that we should recollect whether we are a layperson or a renunciant. So this sutta is for all of us. So I will drop the link into the chat because I can. Okay, so it's Anguttara 557 for anyone playing along. So I'll start off with reading it and we'll see where we go from there. Mendicants, a woman or a man, a layperson or a renunciant should often review these five subjects. What five? I am liable to grow old. I am not exempt from old age. A woman or a man or a layperson or a renunciant should often review this. I am liable to get sick. I am not exempt from sickness. I am liable to die. I am not exempt from death. I must be parted and separated from all I hold dear and beloved. And I am the owner of my deeds, heir to my deeds. Deeds are my womb, my relative and my refuge. I shall be the heir of whatever deeds I do, whether good or bad. A woman or a man or a lay person or a renunciant should often review this. So these are really powerful reflections that we can do, and I've found them personally useful as someone who has been suffering from a long-term injury, right? And I kind of jokingly said to Ajahn Brahmali, he's like, so Venerable, how's your shoulder going? You know, how's your injury? You better yet? And I'm like, no, Ajahn, I am subject to sickness. I have not gone beyond sickness. And I was just being cheeky, right? And then I went, oh, no, this is just like real. This is like nature. And I found it so helpful just to be like, oh yeah, this is just like normal. But we think that we're not going to be sick, or that we're like, you know, that we're going to get better. I was talking to someone yesterday and not online. Okay, good. And he was just finishing up cancer treatment and saying how, you know, how he'd kind of made the choice before not to have any chemo or radiotherapy or anything like that, and now you know he'd been kind of delaying the inevitable, and I said, you know, we are all going to die, and he looked at me kind of horrified, and he goes, no, I meant the chemo treatment. I was like, but you're 70. So it really is like this is the truth. Like, there is no one in this room, right, who hasn't got sick. Anyone in this room who's never been sick, right? It's just like the nature of things. And this is the beauty of like the Buddhist teachings, right? It's not like telling us something that we have to, like, you know, maybe believe in later or something, you know. It's just like the Dharma is about the realities of our life and having that right perspective, right? So the first reflection is, I'm liable to grow old. I'm not exempt from old age. And when I first read this, I thought, well, what about if we don't make it to old age? But we're all going to make it to old age, and we've all made it to old age before. That's the whole point, right? So maybe we have a short life in this life, but we are still of the nature to age and reach old age, right? And to fool ourselves that we're not going to get old. I mean, you can for a little while, but I mean, it creeps up on you. The aches and pains, they're there, even if you're reasonably healthy. So that's the first reflection. As I'm of the nature to grow old, I have not gone beyond, I'm not exempt from old age. I'm liable to get sick. I'm not exempt from sickness. I'm liable to die. I am not exempt from death, right? How often do we actually reflect on this? The first time I really took these reflections seriously was when my dad wound up in intensive care, and I wasn't sure whether he was going to live. And I was in Western Australia and he was in South Australia, and there were COVID lockdowns, so I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to fly to go and see him. And the whole world was kind of going crazy with like sickness and death. And doing these reflections was like, well, what else do you expect, right? Because often when we get sick or one of our loved ones gets sick, we think, why me? But the Buddha says, why not? Why not? It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And so just doing these reflections like this, just bringing them up each morning, helps us to remember this. And so I must be parted and separated from all that I hold dear and beloved. When we know that our lives are finite, and the things and the people that we care about are finite, that they could be separated from us at any time. And if we actually remember this each day, how's it going to change the way that we move through the world, right? If we actually stop and do the reflections, like this power of reflection, this power of perception can really change the way that we live our lives, right? And I'm the owner of my deeds, heir to my deeds. Deeds are my womb, my relative, and my refuge. I shall be the heir of whatever deeds I do, whether good or bad, right? So this word deeds is how Bhante has translated kamma. So we're the heirs of our deeds, right? We're the ones that have to take responsibility for our actions. Our deeds are our womb. It's like where our future is born from. We're born from our deeds, both in this life and in future lives, right? They're our relatives and our refuge. So what we're talking about here is like the choices that we make. It gives us, you know, this is like another difference, I guess, between like Buddhist religion and like a theistic religion. Because in Buddhism, we're the ones responsible for our choices. We're the ones responsible for our deeds. So when you take the five precepts, you say, I undertake the training to refrain from killing living beings. It's not thou shalt not kill. It's not someone up there telling you down here that you shouldn't do it and keeping the score up there. We are the owners of our deeds, heirs to our deeds, born of our deeds, supported by our deeds, and our deeds are our refuge. And this is just reality, right? This is cause and effect. So I shall be the deeds of whatever
I shall be the heir of whatever deeds I do, whether good or bad. A woman or a man or a layperson or a renunciant should reflect often on this. So these reflections, it's amazing. Like, I thought that this was quite commonly known, but I've asked a lot of people, like, say, from Sri Lanka, and it's not a very common thing. But I've heard that in Thailand, it's actually quite common for the lay people to do these reflections. So, yeah. So it says next, what is the advantage for a woman or a man or a layperson or a renunciant of often reviewing this? I am liable to grow old. I'm not exempt from old age. There are sentient beings who, intoxicated with the vanity of youth, do bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. Reviewing the subject often, they entirely give up the vanity of youth, or at least reduce it. This is the advantage for a woman or a man or a layperson or a renunciant of often reviewing this. I am liable to grow old. I am not exempt from old age. And what is the advantage of often reviewing this? I am liable to get sick. I am not exempt from sickness. There are sentient beings who, drunk on the vanity of health, do bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. Reviewing this subject often, they entirely give up the vanity of health, or at least reduce it. This is the advantage of often reviewing this. I am liable to get sick. I'm not exempt from sickness. Drunk on the vanity of health. Right? And what is the advantage of reviewing like this? I'm liable to die. I'm not exempt from death. There are sentient beings who, drunk on the vanity of life, do bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. Reviewing this subject often, they entirely give up the vanity of life, or at least reduce it. This is the advantage of often reviewing this. I'm liable to die. I'm not exempt from death. What is the advantage of often reviewing this? I must be parted and separated from all I hold dear and beloved. There are sentient beings who are aroused by desire and lust for their dear and beloved, do bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. Reviewing this subject often, they entirely give up desire and lust for their dear and beloved, or at least reduce it. This is the advantage of often reviewing this. I must be parted and separated from all I hold dear and beloved. You know what the most frequently asked question I get asked is? How do I let go of attachment to my children? It is by far the most frequently. And I'm like, I'm a monastic. I've got no kids. What do I know? I was like, well, I had two dogs and I was really attached to my dogs. Does that count? But I can't even think. Like, it's a thing, right? It's obviously like a common problem that people with children have. People with parents of children have, right? And it's like that. Yeah, it's because we have this attachment, we have this connection. What is this, right? What is this? Where does this come from? It's that believing that it's mine, right? Because I don't really, like, you know, I like dogs, but I didn't really care about other people's dogs or whatever, right? I'm assuming, like, you know, people who have kids probably like their kids a lot more than they like other people's kids. So it's like that, right? It's that all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, is what we need to reflect. Like, this is only a short-term agreement we have with these beings. And so it changes the way that we relate to them, right? Because if something's mine and I possess it and I control it and I can do what I want with it, and this is all very useful when, like, our young beings are very young and they need that guiding. But, like, our relationship needs to change. We need to grow in wisdom. If we're a parent, And knowing that these things are liable to change and disappear, we can all treat them with more gratitude, or like they're more precious, right? Like a precious object we would look after. But we also know that it's like a short-term deal. Like this glass, it's a short-term deal. We know it's going to turn to glass crumbs at some point in its life. It's like that. So we care for it, right? Anything that's precious, we care for rather than control. If I hold on to this so tightly, I'm not going to do it because I do not want glass in my hand. It will hurt me. And this is what controlling does, right? It's the opposite of caring. It's the opposite of caring. So all that is mine, beloved and dear, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And what is the advantage of often reviewing like this? I'm the owner of my deeds, heir to my deeds. Deeds are my womb. Deeds are my relative and my refuge. I shall be the heir of whatever deeds I do, whether good or bad. They're sentient beings who do bad things by way of body, speech, and mind. Reviewing this subject often, they entirely give up bad conduct, or at least reduce it. This is the advantage for a woman or a man or a layperson or a renunciant of often reviewing like this. I'm the owner of my deeds and heir to my deeds. Deeds are my womb, my relative, my refuge. I shall be the heir of whatever deeds I do, whether good or bad. So this is like taking responsibility for our actions. It's like a totally normal and adult thing to do, but we'd rather someone else did it for us sometimes, right? It's totally like that. And it's knowing that our actions have consequences. And when we know that our actions have consequences, then it's up to us to make the right choices, right? So when we choose to undertake any of the precepts, we do so because we know that our actions have consequences for ourselves. We know our actions have consequences for other people. And this is hugely powerful for us, right? Because then we're not like just meaningless blobs in samsara being bounced around. So this is the thing, like there's this idea in Christianity of free will, and this is often a thing like that gets brought up then in Dharma talk, especially in like Western circles, because people want to know like if there's all this conditionality, then what about free will? But free will doesn't really, like free will is something that doesn't really apply within Buddhism, because free will is like a Christian concept to explain why God created all these things, yet all the bad things happen, right? It's like it explains why there's still war if God exists. And God is this all-loving God. But we don't have this problem, right? We know that we can make choices, but we have only a range of choices that we're able to make, right? It's not like you could just choose to do anything. You can't just go whoosh and fly up into the air. Like, we can't do that. Can't do that. Also, like, if you are in certain situations, like, you're in poverty, you only have a certain range of choices that you can make. There's no such thing as free will. These, you are in a situation based on the conditions around you, right? And this is what you're limited to do. You're limited by your knowledge, right? So if you don't know any better, you can't do any better. So this is going back to this idea of karma, right? Like once we know that we
have different choices, then we can choose to make better choices. And by doing these reflections, we are conditioning the choices that we make. So if we think of the first links of dependent origination, it's avijja, paccaya, sankhara, ignorance, conditions, choices, right? So we can only reach out and touch and interact with things that are within the area of light. There's already dim spots over in the kitchen that we can't see so well. It's like that in our minds. We've got these dim spots, and we can even be hiding things that we don't want to know about ourselves or about others or about the world. We'll just shove those off in those dark corners. And that's a choice. So as Buddhists, what we're trying to do is abandon greed, hatred, and delusion. And the opposite of greed, hatred, and delusion being generosity, kindness, knowing, or wisdom, right? So it's by knowing that our actions have consequences and conditioning those choices to lead us further and further towards letting go of greed, hatred, and delusion, which is why we should do these kind of reflections. Where are we up to? I've lost my spot now. Okay, so the sutta goes on and it says, then the noble disciple reflects, it's not just me who is liable to grow old. Not being exempt from old age, for all sentient beings grow old according to their nature, as long as they come and go, pass away and are reborn. When they review this subject often, the path is born in them. They cultivate it, develop it, and make much of it. By doing so, they give up the fetters and eliminate the underlying tendencies. Everyone know what the word fetter is? Because I've had this come up. People like don't know what fetter is. Someone thought it was the same as feather. Very, very confusing, right? If like English isn't your first language. Fetter is like the shackle. It's the chain that ties you to things. It's what prisoners wear around their ankle and they drag it around with them, right? So these are the things that chain us into samsara. This is what the fetter is. Okay, so the fetters, they give up the fetters and eliminate the underlying tendencies. It's not just me who is liable to get sick, not being exempt from sickness, for all sentient beings get sick according to their nature, as long as they come and go, pass away and are reborn. When they review this subject often, the path is born in them. They cultivate, develop, and make much of it. By doing so, they give up the fetter and eliminate the underlying tendency. It's not just me who is liable to die and not being exempt from death. For all sentient beings die according to their nature, as long as they come and go, pass away and are reborn. When they review this subject often, the path is born in them. They cultivate, develop, and make much of it. By doing so, they give up the fetters and eliminate the underlying tendencies. It's not just me who must be parted and separated from all that I hold dear and beloved. All sentient beings must be parted and separated from all they hold dear and beloved, as long as they come and go, pass away, and are reborn. When they review this subject often, the path is born in them. They cultivate, develop, and make much of it. By doing so, they give up the fetters and eliminate the underlying tendencies. It's not just me who shall be the owner of my deeds and heir to my deeds. For all sentient beings shall be the owner of their deeds, heirs to their deeds, and as long as they come and go, pass away and are reborn. When they review this subject often, the path is born in them. They cultivate, develop, and make much of it. By doing so, they give up the fetters and eliminate the underlying tendencies. So this reflection helps us to have compassion, right? We're all suffering beings here in samsara. And this sutta is specifically targeted at those of us in the human realm, right? Like normally, like a lot of the suttas, it'll be like, hey, mendicants, this is for you. But this is for lay people and mendicants. I mean, sometimes the suttas for the devas, but the devas, this sutta wouldn't work. The devas have too much happiness to actually realize that they're going to be dying, right? They've got a little bit too much pleasure. And so this is the perfect opportunity, this very life, for us to do this kind of reflection, right? We have just the right amount of sickness. Right? I'm like, gosh, I'd really love less sickness. We apparently have just the right amount of suffering and the right amount of sickness to be able to do this kind of reflection and see that ourselves and others are actually liable to old age, sickness and death. That the things that are precious to us are impermanent, right? So we've got this impermanence. We've got suffering and we can't take it personally, right? All of us are totally and utterly subject to this problem. Impermanence, suffering and non-self. That sounds familiar. Okay. And so when they review this subject often, the path is born in them. Because this is the foundation for right view, right? Easy to miss, but this is the foundation for right view. You didn't think, those of you who have heard me give a Dhamma talk, you get away with me not starting to talk about the Eightfold Path, because that's my thing, right? This is why karma is important. This is why reflection on our actions is important. It's not something like right view seems like it's this complicated thing that you kind of like, you know, it seems quite theoretical until you do reflections like this, until you see that this is just about the cause and effect. This is just about the suffering in our lives. It's about how we take all these things so personally when they're just part of nature. So this impermanence, this suffering, and this non-self are just the foundations for the path. So the from right view, what comes next? Anyone? Eightfold Path. Right thought, right intention. Right intention. And what is right intention? There are three factors of right intention. Anyone? Anyone? Interactive part of the Dhamma talk. It's the intention for renunciation, right? Yeah, the intention for non-harming and the intention for non-cruelty. So they're the three aspects. Can you see how this springs out of doing these kind of reflections, right? When we do a reflection on things that are liable to break and fall apart, we think about like what's actually worth it, you know? If we don't go and buy the things from Temu. Because it's like, it's gonna break. We know it's gonna be rubbish. Not even beloved, not even worth it. Not worth it. But it's about renunciation, right? Like you can see how like these reflections, we start to think about what's important in our lives. If we're gonna get sick, if we're gonna die, what's the point in accumulating all this stuff? We should be investing, like the investment of a multi-lifetime, right? Not that this is not about the stock market. This is like a proper investment in our lives. It is to be able to invest in what's important, right? So we can invest in the relationships in our lives. We can invest in the relationships with ourselves, and we can invest in our relationship with the world, right, by doing these kind of reflections. So, yeah, don't worry about your investment portfolio. It's about what's actually valuable to you. And so we can see that's how renunciation then springs out of right view. These things sit on top of each other. And we can see other people are subject to sickness. Other people are subject to being parted from their loved ones. Other people suffer from their stupid choices, not just us, right? And it removes conceit as well, right? When we see that our choices, like we make bad choices, other people make bad choices. We make good choices. Oh, I'm so great. I made such good choices. I'm so great. Oh, those other people, oh my Lord. Not like that, right? We're the owners of our actions. We land in our own dog shit sometimes. And so then we kind of like, we just tread a bit more lightly through the world. We treat other people a little bit better, right? Oh, look, there's like the next parts of the Eightfold Path. There's right speech and right action spring straight out of those things, right? Really logical. It's not something that you have to make yourself do. If you do the reflections, you get the right intention. If you've got this intention, then you're not going to cause problems in the world, right? It just doesn't make any sense. Right, doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you do that? And yet we do, because we don't reflect again and again. And so this is why. These are the like kind of things that we need to do. We need to review back. How did the choices we make? Because the choices are only our own. We have to take responsibility, not for, like, karma isn't everything that happens. Like the fact it rained today while I was on Pindapat, my karma? Someone else's karma? No, that was just the weather, right? There are things that are not our karma, right? Sickness. A lot of sickness is not our karma. That's just part of nature. Kings and ministers. No, not our karma. Thank goodness. Moo was looking worried. She's like, is it my karma that we have all these horrible right-wing politicians in the world? Thank gosh, not. This is why we can make good choices. Right? So it's not fate, but we're not, you know, we also like can't just like let everything go either. It's somewhere in between. Dodgy relatives, not our karma. The Buddha said so. Right? The relative that's going to rip you off one day, either this lifetime or another lifetime. No. That's their choice, right? The people that hurt you, that's their choice. The choices we have are how we react to the situations. And these are the choices that we condition through our wise reflection. So the sutta finishes up. For others, sickness is natural, and so are old age and death. Through this is how their nature is. Ordinary people feel disgusted. If I were to be disgusted with creatures whose nature is such, it would not be appropriate for me, since my life is just the same. Living in such a way, I understand the truth without attachments. I mastered all vanities of health, of youth, and even of life. Seeing renunciation as sanctuary, zeal sprang up in me as I looked to extinguishment. Now I'm unable to indulge.
Lula, in bloody hell.
There's no turning. There is no turning back. I'm committed to the spiritual life. Thank you for that.
You love.
I do. I think that was our dear friend Gillian. I don't know. Oh, dear. Thanks, whoever had your microphone on. That was perfect timing. You just, like, upgraded the Dharma talk. Now I'm dizzy with Okay, so... yeah, I reckon that was what I was going to say, but does anyone have anything they want to share, any questions, anything they want to reflect from that? Or should we just all catch our breath for a second?
I have a little question.
Oh, hang on. Okay, someone's got a question. Do you want to pop it in the chat? Hang on.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, thank you. Sinsin, yes.
No, I just wanted to say that was an excellent Dharma talk.
Oh, thank you, Sinsin. I was feeling very nervous, especially like all these people showing up. I was like, oh, it's going to be five people. There's no Bunche today, so thank you for coming. yes, Pate. Ajahn Brahm has so been sick. He was sick when I was at Anagarika. He got really, really sick. Yeah. Yeah, he had a cold. I think for Ajahn Brahm and people like that, he is a master of perception. Right? So going back to kind of what we were talking about is, like, he's trained his mind to only see the good, right? So for him, he's like, it's just the body. It's just nature. It doesn't bother him. And so, yeah, it's just, so there's no one, the Buddha got sick, right? The Buddha had a backache. And he said to Viral Sariputta, you do the Dharma talk, I'm going to go lie down on the side. I could have done that tonight. I was like, oh, my shoulder hurts. Hey, you can do the Dharma talk. You've been coming to all these Dharma talks for how long? You've been listening to Bunte nearly as long as me. You can do the Dharma talk. Sinsin, yeah. no. So no one is exempt from these conditions, right? Until we've totally escaped from suffering, until we've ended greed, hatred, and delusion, right? Until not just we've ended greed, hatred, and delusion, but until our body has broken up after that, right? The arahant is still subject to sickness.
Ladies and gentlemen, aging is not just about counting years, it's about mastering the art of restraint.
Thanks, Tom. This is just better and better. it's weird. I cannot mute everyone because I'm unmuted, but if I'm muted, I can mute everyone else. So, like, that's normally my job when I'm sitting back at Lumiere is I sit there and mute everyone. So someone else has to do my job for me tonight. No, I can't mute all. It's like total chaos. Yay. Anyway, we're nearly there. So. Yeah. So it's actually until like final parinibbana that the arahant still is subject to some kinds of suffering. They're not subject to like the sufferings caused by perception, right? Because they've overcome all these perceptions. They know what is nature. They have ended all their karma. And so they're just, the Buddha says it's like the worker waiting for their wage. They've done the job and they're just waiting for their wage. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, go for it. Yep. Yep.
I'm just thinking with some of these reflections, you know, they can elicit fear as well, right?
Yeah.
illness and aging. Particularly death, I think that's probably the strongest. All the rest as well. But I think it's just more about like the balance of like, I mean, I think it's wonderful to do those reflections and like, I imagine most people say, oh, they don't do much at all. But I also just think that, you know, how do you balance that with you know, bringing up fear and not having like this sort of too much of a focus on fear and negativity as well?
I think like in this translation, which is probably more accurate, I haven't looked at the Pali actually for this, but in some translations when I've heard it recited, let's see if I've got the Pali. It's like I'm of the nature to age. I've not gone beyond aging, right? So it's just reflecting this is just a natural thing. It's not a... I think like knowing that this is a natural thing, this is like part of just the natural life cycle, makes it more normal. It's when we think that death is something over there and we're over here and we're going to be confronted by this thing that we don't, you know, that's so foreign and we don't know what to expect. But if we're seeing death in our lives, and this is the problem, like in our sanitized society, especially if you don't, like if you live in the city or something like that, you don't see death, right? You don't even see like old age all the time. Like older people are just shoved off into nursing homes, right? And so it's very easy to be intoxicated with that vanity of youth and that vanity of life. We have something else I was about to say and it just slipped right through my brain. we don't see it because we are sold this myth all the time, right? Blame me, I used to be in marketing and advertising. I was selling you the intoxication of youth, the intoxication of life, and the intoxication of good health and beauty, right? This is what marketers play on, these fears to keep us chasing after more stuffs, right? So it's that fear that actually keeps us from renouncing. When we know that, like, when we just like know that these are normal things in our lives, then it's not such a problem. And that's why it's actually like just valuable in everyday life. It's like if I wanted to sell something to someone, and this is one of the reasons I ordained, it's like I was on a phone to a client and I'd just been on this meditation retreat and my mind's really clear. And she was like a personal trainer or something in fitness. And I was like, well, you just have to prey on people's like insecurities about their body. And this is how you do it. And I was outlining this whole thing. Oh, I'm a really bad person. I shouldn't be saying this. Right? And I was like, yeah, it's actually these intoxications that keep us trapped, keep us in the dark. So, and I was like, until I did these reflections in a time when someone, the most precious person in my life, was probably going to die. And I actually felt a sense of freedom from that. And this is why I talk about these reflections. Sad. A lot of you have met my dad, so you know this has at this point a happy ending, but will eventually end in separation. But yeah, now my dad did make it after 8 weeks in hospital. But it really is like it does, at least my experience of it is it brings it just makes things more normal, right? Because we tricked into this illusion, like the mirage is what's causing us to suffer. I mean, this is what the Buddha told us, right? It's delusion that's causing us to suffer. It's not thinking that causes us to suffer. It's delusion that causes us. It's wrong thinking that causes us to suffer. All right, I'm just going to check out. Are all 8 path factors able to be divided into separate components? If so, where can they be found? Okay, someone's put a link to another sutra in there, but Most of the path factors do have different components. So there's like four kinds of right speech. There's the four right actions, which are in the precepts. There's the five kinds of right livelihood. I might be wrong there. There's the four right efforts. There's the four satipatthanas, which is mindfulness. And there's the four jhanas, which is kind of the end of the Eightfold Path. So this is how those things lead in. Thank you, Scott. Okay, that's the questions from the internet. Any more questions from the room before we wrap up? Oh, sorry. Yep, hi.
I find sometimes the suttas are very depressing.
Yep.
All right. So I would like to know if I can get some information to what you expressed to the education department to children. Might be more lighthearted for me.
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Okay. The translation of the suttas, expressed to children at schools, in the education department.
Like you wanted to find a more simplified translation. I don't know if there is one around. I mean,
because of course you could use that translation in the education department of children. You might be foreign.
Would you?
Yeah, I believe that.
I don't know. I think
we all have different perceptions.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think we sometimes take the intelligence and the emotional intelligence of children for granted a little bit, right? And I think maybe kids can, it's like we're conditioned into believing that we're going to live forever. We're conditioned into all these things. Like kids don't really think about this stuff and they kind of brush it off and they're quite flexible and adaptive, right?
Well, actually, that was kind of my experience as a kid.
Yeah.
I went to school where we had to study religion.
Yep.
In Indonesia, religion is compulsory.
Yep.
So I studied Buddhism.
Yep.
And we were exposed to this, but it didn't sink in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I know, but not know. But
yeah.
Until I became an adult and experienced something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yes, okay. This is death.
Yeah. And like if you had a grandparent die when you were really young, right? It was like, oh yeah, granddad's dead. Okay, let's go play, kind of thing, right? And like, yeah, it depends. And so, yeah, I think also we will only let this sink in as far as like we're willing to. Yeah. Like I could tell this to someone in the street, and they'd be like, yeah, yeah, whatever's. This is just religious whatevers. Yeah, but also like everyone in this room came here because they want to understand the Dharma better, right? And so you're actually like, oh yeah, the Buddha might be right on this one.
Just, you know, it also depends how you explain it to kids.
Yeah.
Because similar to what she said to us about, you know, just saying
it's from mature adults like ourselves, but how would you translate it to a child?
So just saying, like, you just ask the kids, you know, have you had a cold? Do you think
you could ask whether you've had a cold. You could ask, you know.
Say, is that such a, do you think that's such a, unusual thing? Who's had a cold?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was, like, maybe in grade one or grade two and we were living up in the Blue Mountains and our backyard was just being landscaped and the builders there they found a goanna. Yeah, they're the ones about this big. Yeah. and no, goanna. And they gave it to me and they put it in a shoebox and it was like my pet for the day. And I took it to school and took it show and tell and, you know, showed it. Everyone was like, oh, you know, I was the coolest kid around. I'd brought a lizard to school. I had something cool for show and tell. And then I took it home and I was playing in the backyard and the backyard was being landscaped. And I was like, so there was all these piles of sand and my friend and I, we dug these tunnels and we're sending this lizard through the tunnels. And then you know what happens? This kookaburra comes down quick as anything, grabs it. That was how I learned about death. Like, I was really shocked. Right? Yeah, I was really upset. More upset about that lizard than when my granddad had died the year before. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, you had a question?
I just had a reflection on what everyone was saying about the way kids can be taught. Like, I went to a religious school as well.
Yep.
And what we were taught about after you die was very, like, punishment-based.
Yes. Yeah, they tell all sorts of horrible stories to kids about what happens when you die.
You do even this one bad thing and you're the champ, like the scales are going to
turn against you. This is a much more realistic thing to tell to kids. It's like, all right, you have some agency in your life, right? And I think that's like really good to get kids. I mean, especially teenagers, I like to talk about this kind of making good choices, because at that time when you're like in your teenage years or early 20s, you're at that time when you're like, don't believe your parents anymore anyway. And so you're like testing things out, and like, I think that's the thing, like that's a natural part of our development, is to see what our agency is and what kind of choices we can make. And without having that reflection and understanding that like our choices have consequences, then we can easily just follow along with like those standard kind of things of what our parents say. It's like, okay, we go to university and then we get the job, then we find a partner, then we get the house, then we work in the job for the time, and you know, we all live happily ever after. But that's not the only option. And so I think, like, you know, if people actually have that wisdom to reflect and understand and find out what their own values are, and know that your values change as well. And this is why doing reflection often is useful, because maybe the choices that you made 10 years ago are not working for you anymore. Yeah. Sorry? There was another.
Who's
next? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, the first four reflections are like accepting and resignation, but the big one is, as you say, is the choices. Is the one
that empowers you. It is, right? It turns it around. Yeah, you can do something. Yeah. 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 All right. I'm going to repeat that for everyone, because that's really useful. I shared this with Jose when he came up for Dana a little while ago, and he was just saying that like the first four are kind of a bit of a downer, but when you get to that fifth one, the fact that you actually have choices, then you can do something about it. Yeah. All right, so we're running out of time. Was there anyone else?
It's not a Dharma thing. It's more a comment on the...
Oh, on Jose's thing. Okay,
yeah. Jose's on Leanne's,
yep.
What you brought up. I just thought it brings up... You kind of touched on it, but it brings up this... has anyone heard of this term, dignity of risk? It's something.
Dignity of risk. Okay.
Yeah, it's something you hear in disability. But,
yep.
But like, you can't. But I've had an experience where I brought up rebirth with an 11-year-old, and they went into hysterics. You can't. The reality is, you may have somebody, a child, whoever, that may go into hysterics. But that doesn't mean that we then, what is it called?
Like hiding the truth.
Like just like not even let anyone know. Like, you know, not let them have a chance.
Yeah, not give people a chance to understand. Yeah. Like, we can be there to provide a safe space for this information to be received, I think. But it's the reality of things. And, of course, these things need to be presented in a way, you know, that means something to the people it's being presented to. But I think, this idea that we do have a choice is incredibly empowering, especially if we're in difficult situations. And, you know, sometimes I hear, like, with the state of the world, people go, oh, look, what can I do? As in, oh, there's nothing I can do. But you can care. We can care. And this is what that reflection on all the, you know, all this beloved and pleasing can be separate. And then that's how it ties into the choices. We can care, right? We can be kind. We can be gentle. Make peace, be kind, be gentle in the great words of Ajahn Brahm. All right. So we're going to wrap it up there, because we have important birthday partying to be done for Sinsin, apparently. Oh, Janet, sorry. Oh, Jenna's birthday too. And we're going to celebrate for Bunte's dad. Okay. All right. So, and Brooke's birthday. Well, okay. So thank you everyone for joining. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming next week with Bunte Sajato. And thank you. Yeah, quick announcement from Sin Sin. Do you want to?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll be guiding leading the Sutta discussion on
Sunday at Rhonda Place. So 1:30. Yeah. So if you're in Sydney and you're joining online now, but you want to join for a Sutta discussion, we're doing Majjhima Nikaya 9, the Right View Sutta at 10 Rhonda Place at 1:30. After Pindapat in Burwood, which will be at 11. So come on down. And also there is an event coming up at Town Hall featuring Bunte Sajato and a member of the Chinese Mahayana community. Thank you, Sin Sin. And a member of the Vajrayana community. So that's coming up on the 24th of August. And you can check that out.
There's a QR code you can scan.
There's a QR code that I don't think people online can scan, but quick, scan. but anyone else in the room, you can come up and scan and find out more information. And I'm assuming Bunte Sajato may possibly sort of put something up on his website, and it's also got a Meta Center logo on there, so that might be a better bet. Okay, so
it's an Eventbrite registration with Meta Center.
Yeah. Okay, Eventbrite with Meta Center. Yep.
There'll be lots of different activities and things that go along with it as well.
Yep.
Sydney Town Hall's beautiful. Obviously, holds a lot of people, which is another thing. But it'll be a very good day and lots of insightful Dharma discussion.
Okay.
Next Friday, Venerable Metta Vihari from Newbury Monastery will be coming in also to join others there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody. Sadi, 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 sadi.